Hi, this is Susie Larson, and thank you so much for listening to Live the Promise today. Our website is filled with even more powerful and encouraging interviews. Learn more by logging on to myfaithradio.com. Good afternoon. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise, and we are here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. Welcome. Really glad you tuned in today. Well, we've got an important topic we're addressing. We're going to talk about bullying and even our role as Christ followers. And so I want to ask you this question. How has your life been impacted by bullying? Have you been bullied? Maybe you've known somebody. Maybe you were the bully in high school or grade school. We're going to talk about those things today and even our role as Christ followers. In just a moment, Paul Coughlin will join me. He's been on the show before, but it's been a long time. It's great to get him back. Couple of quick announcements. If you live in the Eau Claire area, I'll be speaking at Harvest Time Church on Friday and Saturday, February 21 and 22. I would love to see you there. This event is hosted by their very large MOPS group, but it's for women who are in all stages of life. We'll be talking about your purpose in God, walking intimately with God. And that is February 21, 22. If you need more information, you can go to htcfamily.org. That's harvesttimechurchfamily.org. And I hope to see you there. Also, quick announcement, we're getting excited. You know this, we're formed an alliance with Focus on the Family, and there's a new show that we're launching called Everyday Relationships. This is Focus on the Family's new initiative. It's a live daily talk show. I'll be co-hosting that with Dr. Greg Smalley. So our unofficial launch is on Monday, but you're privy to that because you're in this listening audience. So we're going to launch on Monday and just regionally for the month of February and then nationally in March. So we're very excited about it. And that show will air right after this show. So starting Monday at 4 o'clock, I'll be on with Dr. Greg Smalley right after Live the Promise. Really looking forward to that. We are going to laugh. We're going to talk healthy, godly relationships, and we're going to open up those phone lines so you can chime in as well. Looking forward to it. All right. Let me tell you about my guest, Paul Coughlin. We're going to get him on the show. Paul's an author, speaker, founder of The Protectors. His anti-bullying curriculum is used throughout North America as well as numerous other places, including South Africa, Uganda, Australia, New Zealand, and Brazil. He's a best-selling author of 8 books, including Raising Bullyproof Kids. He's appeared on Good Morning America, Nightline, C-SPAN, Newsweek, New York Times, and the LA Times, among other media outlets. He's a father of 3 and a member of the Board of Trustees for St. Mary's School in Medford, Oregon. You can learn more about him on the line online at theprotectors.org. That's theprotectors.org. Welcome back, Paul. So good to have you with us today.
It is great to be with you. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know this. You've been on the show before. We like to start out by talking scripture, and you chose a great passage, Isaiah 59:16. He was amazed to see that no one intervened to help the oppressed, so he himself stepped in to save them with his strong arm, and his justice sustained him. Talk to us about that passage.
Mm. Yeah, you know, ours is a God of justice, and he's upset when we don't do what we can. You know, to help other people, particularly those who are just being torn asunder, that their psychological flesh is being seared from them. And that's really what's happening when it comes to bullying. And he is dismayed and actually very angry, we're told in Scripture, when we don't help people who, in many cases, are unable to help themselves. Unless someone intervenes, they're not going to escape this intentional form of abuse that is designed to strip people of their human dignity, which is a gift that God has given us as being made in his image.
So you started, I mean, that's a basic description of bullying, but I know you've probably got even a more full description. For those who are wondering what falls under this umbrella of bullying, why don't you define it for us?
Sure, yeah. A lot of us think one of the biggest myths about bullying is we think, well, it's about conflict. It's about misunderstanding, miscommunication. There's just kids in this world who can't control their temper, and they just blow up at whoever is in front of them. We think this is bullying. It is not. Bullying is the superior use of power with the intention to harm another person, usually over a period of time and for no good reason. Right now I'm working with a young man, a physically challenged young man, and he had to have open heart surgeries. He had a scar on his chest, and he had actually had stroke afterward, and lost the ability to control one of his limbs. And the other kids in his class, other boys, started bullying him, And they started calling him gay because he wasn't able to use one of his limbs. And the mother thought, well, and the sister thought, well, if we just went and spoke to the kids who were doing this, were abusing their child, that they would understand his special needs, and as a result, they would leave him alone. So they did that, and afterward, the kid was bullied even more because these kids used this information against him even further. That is, and I bring that up, as you know, Susie, because that's what a lot of parents think. We think if we can just reason with the bully, we think that if we can show that bully mercy and compassion and kindness and love, that that will conform and change that kid. Sometimes that works. I'm sorry to say, unfortunately, that's the minority of the time. It's not about those things. It's about a deliberate desire to harm another person. They know they're doing it, and they would do more of it if people let them.
And that is the sad thing about it. What has happened to our moral compass? What has happened to our conviction? I mean, you know a little bit about my story. I was jumped by teenage boys when I was a grade schooler and beat up bad. That was a one-time event, but it did mark my life. My sister, though, was relentlessly bullied by her classmates and continually, where they had power over her. And so just raising my voice, I just remember watching TV, and if something would happen on TV where somebody exerted some power and was laughing at somebody who was less privileged, if my kids chuckled at it, I'm not kidding you, I'd stop that TV and I'd look at them. I'd say, nothing about that is funny. I mean, trying to create a contrast and some conviction here. Talk to maybe us as parents, what we can do, and more of that, basically, to create some kind of a framework to say, this starts in the smallest places where you think things are funny that are not funny. Go there, if you would.
Yeah, we need to, you're right on the front lines. How can we diminish bullying? Many ways. The number one way is to start with parents, that we point it out. When we see people who are underpowered, and, underpowered relative to others, they don't have the same economic status, they might be of a different culture, they might speak a little differently physically, they might be a little underpowered relative to others, not as much social power. And when we see these people ridiculed, when we see particularly disdain and contempt expressed toward another person because they might just be a little different, that is where we need to say, no, see, that's wrong. That is not what you do in those situations. Not only do you not partake in that sort of behavior, I expect you to stand against it. Mm. That is what Jesus did. That is what we've been told by the prophets of the Old Testament, among others, that we are expected, when it's within our power to act, we are expected to intervene and speak truth into those situations. There's some people listening right now who think that bullying actually makes people stronger. Usually men will say, well, I was bullied when I was younger, and it made me a better person today. That they probably weren't bullied
right
to begin with. And then secondly, statistically, we're not stronger. 7 out of 10 targets of serial bullying have great difficulty forming lasting adult relationships. They struggle with anger and particularly resentment. And resentment is one of the main negative emotions that tethers people to drug and alcohol abuse. Mm. It does not make us stronger. Statistically, it weakens us.
Yeah, boy, and it makes perfect sense. I mean, how you can be victimized by somebody who's misusing power over you, how that in any way could have a positive effect, it can't. I mean, God can redeem us from the pit, but it's not that the act itself helped us in any way. Well, for those who don't understand the extent of how widespread bullying is, maybe give us an overview of its impact in our day.
Well, right now, bullying is the number one form of violence that our children will experience in their lifetime. It's the number one form of violence, and it's the only form of violence that we tell the most vulnerable among us to just ignore. About 13 million children will be bullied during an average school year. That's about 160,000 a day. And what we need to keep in mind with that statistic is that one was born in the middle 1990s, well before cyberbullying. it is safe to say that that number, this 13 million, is actually a lot greater than that. And it's now the number one concern among parents and students. It has surpassed, at least in one study, the worry about illicit sexual activity, illicit drug use, and gang activity. So it really has come to the forefront in the minds of our nation, especially, for example, with school shootings. The Secret Service interviewed 37 school shooters, asked them why they did it. Almost all of them, 85%, told the Secret Service that they did it in part for revenge against bullying.
Boy, you sure see, Paul, the response of people reacting in anger. The bullies reacting in anger, but people who are doing the bullying are reacting in anger at something. And so it's all on the rise. You can just see the implosion of our culture. And if we as Christ followers don't rise up and stand in the gap, who will, for crying out loud? Boy, well, if you just tuned in today, you can tell I'm kind of passionate about this. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to Paul Coughlin. And he really is a foremost voice in our day for this issue of bullying and is equipping kids and parents to stand in the gap. And we'd love to hear from you. How has your life been impacted by bullying? Maybe you've got a question or comment for our guest today. Otherwise, I'd love to know, what have you learned? How has your life been impacted? And what's God doing about it in your life now? 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. We've got resources off of our Faith Radio shelf for those of you who get on the air, or you can email a question, susie@faithradionet.com, susie@faithradionet.com. So, Paul, I was reading on your Heroes blog, great website, by the way, but I noticed a term you used, bully side, and I would love for you to explain what that is and maybe a story that can go along with it.
Sure. Well, we have, unfortunately, what is probably a very dangerous rise in what has been described as bully side. We do have to be a bit careful with this term, and because it presupposes in the mind of many that it is the only contributing factor that would cause a kid, a teenager, to take their life. In many cases, it's more complicated than that. But it is also safe to say that though it may not be the only issue involved, it certainly is a contributing factor in the lives of more and more kids across the country and indeed in the world. One young lady named Alex Moore, and I've had the privilege to meet her parents, and I've been given the freedom to tell her story. She was horribly bullied in her school there in Alabama, Jamison, Alabama. And she, she had her, and while standing in front of other kids, the bullies pulled her pants down, including her underwear. She was horribly bullied in PE class. She was locked in a closet for more than 3 hours during school day. She was called names I can't repeat. She was the recipient of a cruel, cruel act of premeditation called the pig race, and that's where the seniors of that school would get at one end of the school and at the appointed time run across the campus looking for who they called the pig, and whoever was able to kiss her on the cheek first was the prize winner. So she was she was deemed one of the less attractive girls in her class. This, according to these seniors. And by the way, this is a community that describes itself as Christian. It's a religious community.
Wow.
She was cyberbullied. Three of the kids who cyberbullied her on their Facebook page described themselves as devout Christians. And she just couldn't take it anymore. I would ask our listeners, our adult listeners, could you take that?
Right.
I mean, if that happened to you, what would you do? You would run. If that happened in the workplace, there would be multiple lawsuits filed within a day, you know. But for whatever reason, we expect our children to tolerate this kind of behavior. Well, one morning she was supposed to take the bus to school, and she leapt from an overpass at 6:05 a.m. into morning traffic. And
she sent a message to the world, didn't she?
She did. I mean, it was very much, for those of you who remember the Vietnam War, if you remember the Buddhist monks who set themselves ablaze in the streets of Saigon, that was an act of protest. Alex Moore, what's interesting, Susie, is most girls, as you know, if they take their lives, they tend to do it in a much more private manner. She did it in a very public way. She wanted us to know, but more than know. And she was a Christian girl, by the way.
Mm.
She was going to serve her country. She wanted to go into the military after high school. She wanted us to know what was happening to her. But more than know, she wanted us to act.
I'm just stunned, you know, Paul. I'm stunned by the evil. I mean, this is downright wickedness in the heart of man, isn't it?
It is, and we're called to combat it. We're called to resist evil. This is not boys being boys, girls being girls. Again, if we were to take this behavior and put it in the workplace, and you went to your boss, and you said, "These are the things that are happening to me," and if your boss says, "Well, you know, employees will just be employees," we would be indignant.
Yeah.
You couldn't tie us down. There wouldn't be enough straps to tie us down. Well, I mean, it could be part of the sin of Sodom.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, according to Ezekiel, one of the sins of Sodom was that its people, particularly its women, were indifferent to the plight of the needy. And I think that that is involved there. There is sin here in regard to the Christian community's response, or more accurately, lack of response to this unabated suffering that is taking place on behalf of our children. What we need to realize is that this is a mission field. Our children need to be the ones standing up for human dignity, standing up for Alex Moore. There is not evidence of one kid of faith who ever stood up for Alex Moore or tried to defend her.
That's just mind-boggling. In fact, you wrote here on your blog, "Our children have no choice but to attend school. When you believe you have no choice, you eventually have no hope." And so a parent who's got a child in school who's relentlessly bullied, get them out of there?
Well, I think that can be a very viable solution. And in some states, I'm very glad to say, in fact, I'm working with a kid right now who actually it was his doctor who contacted me and told me about his plight. Cardiologist, you can sometimes get a doctor's note that says this kid needs to be out of school, and in some states, the states has to give you access to online education at the state's expense.
Mm-hmm.
So you can get and also tutoring at home, sometimes twice a week. So if your child is being bullied, and you just don't see it getting better. If it doesn't, you know, if it doesn't get better, it gets worse. There's no neutrality really when it comes to bullying. There's no neutral. The neat thing is you do have options, more options than we ever had in the past, and some of that could include tutoring as well as online education. So yes, there are options.
So are any laws changing on behalf? I mean, you're really out there right now. I mean, just as even harassment in the workplace was something that sort of evolved where people suddenly had rights, anything else like that happening with bullying in schools?
Absolutely. I mean, many states legislature, almost every state now, I believe 49 out of the 50 states, have anti-bullying laws on the books, and they're revising those fairly regularly. Unfortunately, where it usually breaks down, most schools have a viable anti-bullying policy. The policy is there. The laws are there. The real issue is the enforcement of the policy and the enforcement of the law. That's usually where it breaks down.
So when you go into these schools, how received are you?
Well, amazingly so, and it's a self-selecting process. If they want to bring the protectors in, and we work with both public schools and private schools. We just, a school district in Texas, 35,000 kids have just adopted the protectors program, both live presentations, training, and then follow-up curriculum. So by the time they contact us, in many cases, many times, they are ready to act, and it's usually the more proactive people. And I would say, too, what I've noticed is they tend to be the more confident leadership. These are the people who say, of course bullying is taking place. How could it not? Right, Susie, right now, bullying is happening in Sunday schools across America. Wherever 10 or more kids gather, statistically there is bullying. And most people, particularly in the church, could not spot it to save their lives. They don't really have the training, let alone actively intervene or effectively intervene. It is happening all over. So the real issue is when a school brings someone in, they're not necessarily admitting inordinate guilt. That it's such highly predatory behavior that most in authority don't see it, and they need the bystander, the kid, the peer. They need that kid to be coming alongside stander, because bullies are highly selective of who, how, and when they attack. It is really criminal behavior in a very young body. And schools are being wise to be proactive and to aggressively go at it before it becomes a problem.
Yeah, I mean, I'm wondering, what is that? Is it ego, or what's the opposite issue, you know, where we don't want to admit we have a problem? When you think about any scenario with any age group of people, there's a hierarchy. People go in and they assess where they land, and they treat people accordingly, don't they?
Yeah, what can happen there is, and particularly in private schools, and I'm on the board of trustees of a private school, so I understand, the thought goes like this. If we do an anti-bullying program, we're admitting that we have a problem, kids won't come here. That's really the wrong way to look at it. This is actually a public relations opportunity. More and more people are going to be looking for schools that have an active, viable freedom from bullying program. This is an opportunity to actually attract people to your schools. The price of the program, I've often said, should be taken out of the marketing budget.
Absolutely.
not the teacher training part, but the marketing. This is at the forefront of everyone's mind. The group that does the best job diminishing it, they're the ones over time. It won't happen overnight, but over time, these are the schools that people are going to be attracted to.
I'm telling you, if my kids were still young and going to school and I heard about a school that had employed an anti-bullying program, of course I would be like, sign them up. I'll drive them across town, because of how that can mar your sense of identity. Well, how about if you talk for a moment about maybe characteristics in a child that you would identify as the potential bullier? Because to me, Paul, I would think that if the kid feels like they can sass off with no repercussions, if they feel like they can laugh at things that aren't funny, well, you start to see kind of that snarky attitude, and it goes unmet by authority, discipline, love, redirection. I mean, what do you think about that?
No, you're really on to something there. What makes a bully? Usually, most coercive parenting. Now, I say that with a bit of a caveat, because we could probably all think of people whose kids are bullies, and the parents are very kind people. I mean, you know them more than just in public. You know them privately. You know they're not coercive. And but the number one character trait that will, or the number one opportunity issue that will make a kid a bully, usually is coercive parenting on behalf of the parents. And what does that mean? It just means that the parents tend to bully themselves. The kids learn it. It looks normal to them, and away they go. The one thing I want to add there, though, is that what makes you'll often hear experts say that a child who bullies has a high need for power. And I want to back up a little bit, because we argue that we all have a desire for power. I have it. I want control in my life, but I'm willing to stop at dominating and harming another person to get what I want. So most people want power in their lives. What makes a bully different is they're willing to chew other people up in order to get that domination, in order to get that sense of pleasure, frankly, that they get from harming another person. They enjoy another person's pain. That is part of the definition of sadism. I just gave you a big part of the definition of sadism. That is what a serial bully is. They're a sadist. And so they tend to be snarky, as you said. They look down on others. They often speak highly disrespectful of other people. They tend to be the kids in the group that give the more decent kids in the group a stomach ache. They're the ones that other kids just don't like, and they can't exactly tell you why. They just cannot stand that person over time. And it's usually a fairly nuanced degree of manipulation. There's also a high level of audacity in the bully. And we tell targets to use the audacity of the bully against them. They tend to think that they're the smartest person in the room. They tend to think that no one's really on to them. And we encourage people to use that against them by setting them up. We rent out, as you know, undercover audio and video equipment because we are very serious about rescuing children from bullying. We encourage people to record what they do, and now you have evidence that you can give to authority.
Such powerful, powerful stuff. Talking to Paul Coughlin today about bullying. What is our part as Christ followers? Love to invite you into the discussion, 877-933-2484. Otherwise, email Susie@faithradionet.com. In a moment, we're going to talk about the target. That's the person that the bully's got his eyes on. And we're going to talk about how do you maybe bully-proof your kids and things you can equip them with so that they can stand and walk through this thing. 877-933-2484. You're listening to Live the Promise. More with Paul Coughlin in just a moment. Tuning in today, I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. Talking to Paul Coughlin today about bullying. And I want to know, how has bullying impacted your life? And maybe you've got questions. Paul is a bullying expert, I should say, anti-bullying expert. 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. Otherwise, email Susie@faithradionet.com. Okay, Paul, before the break, you used the term target. You're talking about the person that's going to be the victim of bullying. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And targets, they do share some things in common. First of all, what I'm about to say, none of it justifies the behavior, but it does help to put it in context because, again, bullies are highly selective of who, how, and when they attack. They tend to go shopping in September, the beginning of a school year. And by October, most bullies have found their targets. They're looking for a certain kind of person. One is that they're isolated. And I tell you, as a parent, one of the number one thing you can do is to help your child grow and maintain friendships. Having at least one friend at the school that they're going to, whether that be public, whether that be private, the groups that they attend, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, Awana, Sunday school, summer camp, have, to the best of their ability, have them have at least one good friend with them. And unfortunately, what happens with some targets of bullying, they tend to be non-assertive. So non-assertive people, they're more easy to bully than assertive people. Again, bullies are not looking for a fight. They're looking to overwhelm. And a non-assertive person is more easy to overwhelm than a more assertive person. So they're looking for the person, and it's usually body language. They're looking for the person who doesn't make eye contact much. They walk with their shoulders slumped forward. When standing, they shuffle from foot to foot. They tend to, scratch themselves a lot because they're kind of uncomfortable in social situations. That is who they're looking for. And we have an upcoming movie called Bullied that we're a part of. The premiere will be next month in Portland, Oregon. And the Protectors were consultants to this movie. And between shots, I was talking to one of the producers, and there was a circle of boys. They were actors. It was between tapes. And they were in this almost perfect circle, except for this one boy. He was half a step out. He wouldn't make eye contact. He was shuffling from foot to foot. He was scratching himself on the shoulders a lot. He was fidgety. And I said to the producer, if I were a bully, that is who I would go after. Because I'm pretty sure he's not going to to push back. So have at least one good friend, if at all possible. Help coach your child to fake it till you make it. They're going to have to appear more assertive than what they might feel inside, but over time, they can do it. Hmm. I would highly encourage some of the kids who that might be an issue with them to take possibly some acting classes. They need to learn to act more assertive than they feel inside, because it's like a repellent to a mosquito. Assertive body language, assertive words, assertive life is one of the biggest things you can do to not be a target of a bully, or for that matter, a target of a criminal later on in life.
Hmm. You know, working with International Justice Mission, and they go confront the world's worst bullies, the traffickers and the slave owners. And Gary Haugen has said, what we have learned as we've done this very important work is that bullies really are not that brave. It's just
they're
that
not.
Nobody's standing up to them, you know?
Yeah, what happens is they've gotten used to it. Think about your adult friendships for a second. After you've been around for a while, you've had some bullies in your life. You didn't recognize them at first.
Mm-hmm.
But now you know. I've had three of them in my life, and I've cut all three of them out.
Yeah.
I didn't know it at first. And then once I kind of got on to them, in standing up to them, you'll often find you're probably the only person. You're one of a small group of people who have ever stood up to that person.
Mm.
If we truly want to help such people, we need to stand up to them more.
That's
we need
right.
to be able to speak the truth in love, because they're probably not going to change otherwise.
And
most people change by inspiration or desperation.
Mm.
And when we talk about bullies, in most cases, most of the time, it's desperation. What's in it for me?
Wow.
That is the language in which they speak.
And there's power in numbers. We've got a couple calls on hold. We've got Carrie calling from North Dakota. Carrie, welcome. You're on with Paul.
Thank you so much for having me. First of all, I just want to say I'm very passionate about this subject because as a child, I was bullied.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had wonderful parents that loved me but didn't equip me to handle a situation. And so with my own kids, my husband and I have been very, very forthright about what we will do for them in a situation. And one of the things that I think we get confused about as Christians is we always tell children to turn the other cheek.
Mm.
And that might be the right thing. I don't know. I'm not an expert on this, but I can tell you that's not what I've taught my kids.
Mm.
I've told them, look, you never start a fight. You never, ever be the first one or you will suffer consequences. But if somebody's going to attack you, verbally, especially physically, fight back. You're worth it. You don't just stand there and be a doormat for somebody. And that's a message that we have talked to our kids about. And we let them know, look, I am behind you. I've encouraged them to always tell me about situations and to talk to me. And they do. And they have been bullied. My son has been bullied just, I think, by association with a friend of his that happens to be very feminine. He gets bullied and called names. But what I'm proud of is that I've made it okay for my son to have courage and to say, not meanly and not in some snide retaliation, but to say to that person, and why are you being like this? Why are you being mean to us?
Hmm.
Why are you doing that?
Wow, I'd love to hear.
Yeah,
thank you, Carrie, so much. I'd love to hear what you think, Paul. I appreciate what you're saying.
Well, I say amen to so much of what Carrie said. You know, in fact, the first lesson in the Protector's faith-based curriculum, we have a public school version, values-based, and we have a faith-based. The first lesson goes into what did Jesus mean when he said turn the other cheek? You know, since when you've been struck on the face, which is an insult. It's an insulting thing to be struck on the face. It's humiliating. We're not supposed to return an insult for an insult. We're not supposed to return humiliation for humiliation, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. That is not what we're supposed to do. But since when is being struck on the face mortal danger? It's not. So Jesus didn't say when someone hits you with a baseball bat, turn and let him hit you again. That's not what he was saying. So defending one's own value and purpose, your psychological well-being and your physical well-being is well within the parameters of Orthodox Christian belief, and it always has been, up until for some reason recently, and not exactly sure why, we think that we can't do that. That's never really been fully held throughout history. So your son is completely within his parameters to defend his own value and worth and defend the value and worth of other people.
Yeah.
The real, Carrie, I would warn you in regard to your son and having your son ask them, why are you doing this? You may never know. And I will largely say, unless he's a provocative target, and that is there are kids who provoke other people to anger, if he's not a provocative target, they're doing it because they can. They're doing it because of the pleasure and glee and entertainment that certain people get by dominating, harming, humiliating other people. That's the reason.
And you can't reason with them, right, Paul? You got to confront them. I mean, basically, right?
You do, and you don't owe them candor. We think as Christians that we owe such people candor. We do not. We do not owe these people access to our inner lives. We don't owe them the truth. Let me be blunt. I don't think it's wrong necessarily to lie to such people. I don't think it's wrong. They don't deserve they deserve to be treated with a level of dignity that you would afford everyone being made in the image of God. But what they want to do is corner you in so many different ways. And if you tell them the truth about certain situations, they'll just use that information to harm you even more. I don't believe we were put on this earth to be the world's doormat as Christians. So in fact, we encourage kids to what's called fogging. When they ask you a question, do not respond with an answer. Ask another question in response. You know, Jesus, throughout the Gospels, only responds directly to a question about 5 times. Most of the time, Jesus, when he's being trapped, or they think they're trapping him, he responds with a question of his own. And sometimes he doesn't even respond to the question. Jesus did not suffer the company of bullies. Neither should we.
Mm. Joan from Madison, you've been waiting so patiently, and you got a question for Paul today. Thanks for waiting, and you're on with Paul.
Well, I had more of a comment. I was not bullied as a child, but I was bullied as an adult in a workplace situation by these two unit coordinators, and my supervisor never did anything to stop them. And I was trying to act, you know, in a Christ-like manner and be courteous and turn the other cheek and be kind. And not only that, I was, you know, nearing retirement age. I didn't want to get fired. But I resented the supervisor very much. I hate to admit this, but I really disliked her a lot. But I did not as much dislike the bullies. I could understand where they were coming from, but I do think that not only in a workplace situation, but also in a school situation, if the teachers or the principals or the higher-ups are sympathetic to bullying, if they secretly dislike the child or the employee, they will facilitate the bullying, and that's part of the problem, I think.
Mm-hmm. They'll look the other way. What do you say, Paul?
Well, yeah, what's so spiritually damaging in a case like that is put yourself in the shoes of a kid who's been told that God exists and God loves them and that the adults in their lives really love them as well, yet the adults let them down continually. Mm. We represent God as adults, and what happens with so many of these kids, and I've talked to more than I can count, they don't believe God even cares for them even more because they say, well, if this is the case, why did these people who call themselves Christians let this happen to me after I told them over and over this is the case? And when you're talking about authority that is derelict in its duties, do you want to take a guess as to the number one target of a school shooting? It's going to be the principal.
Wow.
And in any cases, it's the rage of that kid who has been bullied. And when the Secret Service interviewed these kids, they said that the bullying that these children received met the legal definition of harassment and the moral definition of torment. These kids were tormented, and largely they felt that authority had let them down, and they actually go after the authority that lets them down. Rarely in school shootings do the shooter, and all have been male so far in America, rarely do they ever go after the kids who bullied them.
You know, it's making me, over the years, off and on, my hubby and I have worked with youth in different settings, and I remember a scenario where one of the girls was a little bit socially awkward, and then one of the more popular loud ones bullied her. And Kevin and I sat down and said, you keep this up, you're out of the group. This is a privilege to be here. And she's like, you don't know who my family is. You dare to do this. I'm going to get my parents involved. And we said, well, that was going to be our next question. We want your parents to come in so we can let them know, too. You do this again, you're out. And it was amazing to me because by just drawing the line like that, even the girl that was the target, who also needed some discipline at times, when she saw that we stepped in to protect her, we could speak into her life all day long. I mean, we could call her on stuff. We could call her up because suddenly she trusted us in a whole new way. The dynamic of that was really mind-boggling to me.
Imagine, you know, in America and as a faith community, we're very upset of saying that God has been kicked out of our schools. I think there's some truth to that. There's no doubt about it. We can get back in.
Mm.
This is how we get back in. People of faith stand up to this systematic, intentional form of abuse, that instead of being the 13, only about 13% of people who see bullying take place actually ever do anything about it. 40 to 60% of our children, right now, of the parents listening, 40 to 60% of our children are joining the bully. They are laughing while it's happening. They are pointing at the target. They are snickering. They are gossiping. They are cheering on the bully. Those are Christian kids doing that work, wicked work.
Yeah.
Rather, what if in the public school system, Christian kids were known as the ones who stood against this kind of cruelty? Do you know what they would do? They would open their arms to other expressions of our faith.
Mm.
This is a mission field. This is how, for the people who are very concerned, not just about getting back in the public school system, but the right to bear arms, the Second Amendment. if you truly care about these things, you will have to get involved in helping to prevent future school shootings by helping to heal broken youth culture, especially male broken culture, because they are the criminals bringing guns to school and shooting other people in America. So we need to stop complaining as a faith community and stop our conspiracy theories and all the other stuff that really doesn't do much good. We need to get messy. We need to get in the trenches, and we need to start loving these kids, and we need to start helping our children, not someone else's children, requiring that our own children, when they see it take place, assertively but nonviolently stand against it, as I have done with my three teenagers.
Well, I almost think a revival would break out in the schools, because I know just even in different aspects, when I step into that justice part of the heart of God, His power is all over it, because justice is one of the foundations, righteousness and justice, foundations of His throne. So you think of these young people being modern-day heroes going, you got to go through me to get to her. You know, God is right there. And, boy, imagine what would happen in our schools if our kids got a conviction for that mission field.
Well, we would be met with open arms. We'd be met with open arms. And let's, for a second, Susan, let's talk about what happens to the kid who does do that. They grow in courage. Courage is a muscle. It only grows by flexing it. By committing acts of courage, they're more likely to be courageous in the future. And in the Bible, what's really interesting is whenever the word courage exists, it's almost always in contingent with strength. In fact, sign language, the sign language for courage is two clenched fists. Its strength and courage are pretty much synonymous in many cases, many times, and you'll find this throughout Scripture. So our children literally grow stronger when they stand up to other people. They grow in stature, which means the esteem of other people. And now they've got a platform. Now they want it. Now they may be asked, well, why are you always standing up for these people? And they can say, as we do through the protectors, human dignity is a gift from God. No one has the right to tear that from another person. Susie, universally, people respect people who stand up for justice. And we can do that again. If you look at historically, It has been people of faith who have stood against oppression. It's been Dostoevsky and Solzhenitsyn. It has been Wilberforce. It's been Lincoln. It has been Martin Luther King. It has been Mother Teresa, Pope John Paul II, Desmond Tutu, Bonhoeffer. I'm sorry if I forgot anyone's favorite
William
person.
And Catherine Booth.
Harriet Tubman,
yeah.
Sojourner Truth, the abolitionists. We're almost all people of deep Christian faith. This is in the tradition of that hallowed work and that noble cause, and we could be doing it now. And I'm really glad to say that we are. We have three churches in particular, Saddleback probably being the most well-known one. All three have adopted the Protectors as part of their justice ministry.
Wow, that is powerful. So maybe we just have a few minutes left. Give some tips to parents for how they can both equip their child to not be a target, but also equip their child to be a protector.
Yeah, well, we talked earlier about assertive body language on behalf of the target. It's very helpful because 80% of how we communicate with others tends to be through body language, and they're profiling. But bullies are profilers, and so if our children appear strong, they tend not to be as much of a target. Again, they need to have at least one good friend by their side. They can also avoid bullying hotspots. You ask a kid, where are you being bullied? They'll say all over the place. Well, that's not really true. They're being bullied in certain hallways, in certain classes, in certain parts of a cafeteria, and a playground, and the list goes on, certain part of a locker room. Sometimes just avoiding the hot spots can work. You can avoid being bullied, and that was the case when I was younger. I just avoided one locker bank in particular, and the bully never knew where I went. He just couldn't figure out where I was, and that's where it was a great place for him to bully me because it was very packed, and authority couldn't see it. To become an alongside stander, a righteous, heroic, Christ-like alongside stander, it's actually a lot easier than people think. It's usually through assertive but nonviolent words or behavior. One is just to denounce the behavior when you see it. I saw a kid with Down syndrome being bullied in high school. And this one guy who's bigger and stronger than me really went after this kid. And I just turned to him and I said, Greg, leave him alone. I tried to sound like Will Smith. I'm pretty sure I sounded like Lady Gaga. I mean, I'm scared to death, right? We need to explain to our kids that courage is doing the right thing afraid. I did the right thing, but I was scared to death. And there is something... you mentioned it earlier that most bullies are cowardly. It's true. Once you stand up to them, you begin to see their bluff is they're largely bluffing in what they're doing. And when you learn that's the case in a bully when you're younger, it really serves you well later in life. I know a number of pastors who have left the ministry because they didn't know how to deal with a bullying church member. They didn't know how to call their bluff. They didn't know how to pick them apart in a conversation so they could continue in that righteous vocation. The best thing we can do as parents to make our kids alongside standers is to inculcate a sense of duty and responsibility to their fellow man. We are responsible when we see someone else really in great need to help them when it's within our power to act. Statistically, psychologically, when our children fail to help, and again, only about 13% help, the studies show that our capacity for courage, sympathy, and empathy decrease. We literally become smaller-souled people when we don't help other people in need and when we have the power to help them. So it's through assertive but nonviolent words, leave them alone, stop it, that's wrong, let's get out of here. We can train our kids just to put their arm around the kid who's being bullied and escort them out. Most bullies will not go after a person who does that. And we can train them to tell authority what they saw and what they heard, to report to authority, not tattle. Reporting is about something important designed to get someone out of trouble. Tattling is about something insignificant designed to get someone into trouble. So if we can intervene, give authority the information that they need, this is what I saw, this is what I heard, usually it's the assistant vice principal in a school. They know how to handle that kind of information. They can keep your identity anonymous. And so they just need to learn to do the right thing afraid, and they'll find that the quality of their life really, really improves in the process.
Well, definitely is part of our spiritual DNA, that is for sure. So we're just kind of walking out part of what God meant for us as image bearers, wouldn't you say?
That's right. Mm. That's right.
Well, we had a caller, and she said she brought her granddaughter to a play place this week and was bullied by a random girl. She stepped in, approached the parents, made the girl apologize to her granddaughter, and she says, was this the right thing to do? What do you say?
I think so. Someone's got to say something. The longer that these kids get away with this kind of behavior, the more power they tend to suck up in a social setting. There was a time that was commonplace. It wasn't that long ago in my childhood that if someone bullied, boy, parents, they intervened. They were right there. Like, no, that's not how you behave. We've lost that. We've lost that sense of common goodness. So more people need to do that. And let's just be honest. We need to bring back a healthy kind of shame. People should be ashamed of what they're doing. In many ways, today's bully is yesterday's supremacist. They're yesterday's KKK member in many ways, because both believe they're superior to other people. Your average bully believes he or she is actually more valuable than other people. We need to call that what it is, supremacy.
Mm. Well, when you think about that, and you think about if it could be confronted in the play place, how different might it be in years to come? Because as you say, to go into schools and try to talk with the bullier after they've had years of this kind of mindset and practice, then you're just setting yourself up to be mocked. And so we need to catch this at a very young age. So, boy, this has been really important, Paul. Thank you. As we wrap up, I'm just going to ask you to pray for that person listening today, that adult who is still impacted today about what happened way back then. Would you pray for that person?
I will. Father, there is an opportunity to burn out the bad soil. What happened, you may not be able to change that, but at the same time, there is love and there is healing. There were lies spoken to that person. I pray that they get the help they need to overcome those lies about themselves, others, and about the love of God, and to join an opportunity to help other people escape what they went through. It can provide healing, not just for the individual who experienced it before, but they can literally change the lives of other people who are having this done to them right now. They can be a protector. They can be a Christ-like intervener for God's glory and for their spiritual growth as well. Mm. Amen.
Amen. Paul, thank you so much for your time today and for your very important work. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Susie. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, God bless you.
You too.
This is from Psalm 18. It says this, I love you, O Lord. You are my strength. The Lord is my rock, my fortress, and my Savior. My God is my rock and my protection. He is my shield, the power that saves me. He's my place of safety. I called on the Lord who's worthy of praise, and he saved me from my enemies. The ropes of death entangled me. The floods of destruction overwhelmed me. The grave wrapped its ropes around me. Death laid a trap in my path. And in my distress, listen to this, I cried out to the Lord. I cried to God for help. He heard me from my sanctuary, his sanctuary. My cry reached his ears. He rescued me because he delighted in me. God loves you, friend.
Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it.
Great show today. Well, you've been listening to Live the Promise. I'm Susie Larson. You can find a podcast of this show up on our website at faithradionet.com. Give us a couple minutes. That podcast will be up. If you feel a friend needs this, which I believe they do, send it. With a click of a button, you can send it out by Facebook, email, or Twitter. Tune in tomorrow. I'll be talking to James Merritt about 8 winning strategies for facing tough times. If you've just been knocked down, we're going to help you get back up again. That's tomorrow on Live the Promise. Really, really glad you tuned in today. Love to hear from you if you've got different show ideas, topics you'd like to cover, you can email us at susie@faithradionet.com. Well, finally, I'm going to leave you with this. The Lord wants you to last long and finish strong, and He's the one who'll keep you strong to the end. Have a great day.